You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
A fast-talking media mogul owns over 40 newspapers that are all very successful because they cater to popular taste. Sound familiar? Well, the surprise is that I'm describing the central character in a comedy from 1909, Arnold Bennett's What the Public Wants. The name of the comedy is currently being performed by the Mint Theater on West 43rd Street, and it's running through March 13th. Rob Breckenridge stars as Sir Charles Workin, and Ellen Adair is the widow Emily Vernon. I'm very pleased that they could join us today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you.
Did it seem at all dated to you when you first read the script? Either one of you. It's okay.
No, I think. I mean, it's certainly a play of its time, but I think that like so many things, it's so truthful and insightful about the way that the media works in that time that actually it's just part of the way that the media works, and it's the same way that it works today.
That's the big surprise, that some of the things that Sir Charles says we could expect to hear from any number of publishers today, the head of Hearst or Rupert Murdoch or somebody like that.
I think so, yeah. The fact is, as far as a dated piece, there are a lot of words. So, I mean, in what we're accustomed to listening to, that there is a big difference. But the thematic argument is what jumped out at me when I first read it. When Jonathan Bank, the director of the Mint, sent it to me, I thought, this is a compelling argument because it sounds exactly like what you're referring to. How do we sell to a public that has such a vast array of things in front of them and figure out what it is they exactly want?
But it is interesting. The whole notion of giving the public what it wants has remained controversial to this day. And here we are debating the same thing they were that Arnold Bennett was writing about in 1909.
Well, I think it's because there are always also people who think that supplying the public with what exactly they want is to do something slightly reprehensible, you know? So there are always going to be the people who are like, oh God, you know, it's sort of like politicians have never been dirtier than they are now. And like the media has never sort of had more filth than it is right now. That's something that I feel like through all ages.
Or television has never been worse.
Exactly. It's never been worse.
The movies have never been had lower common denominator than they are right now.
Than they are right now, yeah.
Or 1909, for that matter. You mentioned, Ellen, when you came in, that you read a lot. Had you read any Arnold Bennett? I mean, this is a man who was really famous during his lifetime as a novelist. H.G. Wells, Rudyard Kipling, J.M. Barrie were all considered – he was considered an equal to all of them.
It's embarrassing, but I hadn't read any Arnold Bennett. I do think that that's systematic of the place that he has in sort of our modern understanding of literature of the time. But no, I hadn't.
And then this play was so popular, it was published in three different editions between 1909 and 1911, and then just disappeared?
I think there was a revival in like 1922, and Bennett did some revisions to make some of the references in the play current to that time, but I'm not sure that it's had much life since then.
Do you, as actors, do you ever wonder why that might be? I imagine this is not the easiest play to perform because you're just spouting out dialogue in some cases.
Well, from an actor's point of view, back to the thematic argument, you can't play a thematic argument. You can't play how to sell something to the public and expect people to sit in the dark for 2 hours. It's just not that interesting. So our biggest challenge and what continues to be an ongoing challenge throughout the run is to find the drama, to find the human element, to find the passionate interests of the characters in the play. And I think a lot of that is very much embedded in a novelist's approach to a play. So, you know, we're up against somebody who I think – by nature wants to describe something as opposed to perhaps a playwright who goes straight for an action. And as actors, I feel like we're challenged on a nightly basis to move through his words and find the action and find the interplay between the characters.
Well, how did you respond to your character when you read it first?
Overwhelming fear. He's a bit of a monster in a great sort of way.
He's a populist who wants to be named to the House of Lords, so he's working both ends, which I imagine wasn't all that uncommon in Britain at the time, or even more recently with all those media moguls who have been knighted?
Well, to be honest with you, what I truly connected with in this character and what I decided to sort of found my interpretation on, it's very much in the play. He is a common man, born of common means in the north of England, and he refers to himself when he was 12 years old, an energetic, eager young boy, and how that 12-year-old taught him how to learn how to capture the public. He, growing up, refers in the play to the fact that there were no newspapers for 12-year-olds that were worth reading. So when he decided to get into journalism, what he did was he put on the market a newspaper that he actually did want to read. And so the enthusiasm of the 12-year-old has driven him to the top. At the top, there's the glass ceiling in England, 1910, of class. You cannot break through that. Through commerce or any other means, unless you're born into it, you can't do that. And I did a bit of research on Lord Northcliffe, who this character is loosely based on. And one of his quotes, hugely successful man, the real life Lord Northcliffe, there's one of his quotes that says, "If I want a title in the peerage, I'll buy it." So he does embody an exciting new world, which is about commerce and trade and the moving away from the class system.
And Ellen, in your character, Emily Vernon, comes from the same area that Sir Charles comes from, but you get a feeling that she is a step up in class.
Oh, that's interesting. Because I think
well, he wants you to some degree because you're going to class up the place.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it's an interesting question that I feel like is throughout the play about there being different classes of class. So there's, you know, there's the people who are actually born into sort of the peerage, the society people. And then there, you know, are people who are wealthy, who have made a name for themselves. And then there are Sir Charles always talks about the intellectual people. And, you know, that's sort of like, I would
say, the superior
people. He calls them the superior people. But really, it's, you know, it's a bunch of actually very often, as artists are, poor people. So it's going to be the sort of starving artist class, basically, which Emily is a part of as an actress, but would also include novelists and poets and
Sir Charles's brother, who is a guy who just kind of wanders around the world and takes a job on the newspaper, but obviously is much better educated and perhaps a bit more sensitive to other people than his brother.
One of the most magical things about the play, I think, is from my character's perspective, I've created this world of success, and in that world have insulated myself in a kind of protected environment against wanting to be a part of the superior, the intellectual class, but also protected against that. At the top of the play, I have a system that's set up that nobody can get in to see me. The character that you're referring to, played magnificently by Mark Vitor, my older brother, comes wandering back from 19 years around the world and basically interrupts this perfectly insulated life and comes barging in the way he did when we were kids with his interpretation, his ideas, and also a reacquaintance with Ellen's character, Emily.
He brings Emily into the mix.
And all of a sudden, that protected life is interrupted and challenged by all of these different things that Chris starts to create the drama.
But the protected life of British people in general is being challenged at the time. It's a time of societal and technological change, and a part of the plot involves women's suffrage. This case, Sir Charles, who would probably not have thought much about giving the vote to women, suddenly decides this is a way to sell newspapers.
I think that's also the magic of Ellen embodied by – or Emily embodied by Ellen. By bringing that to my attention, I think I see an opportunity. Now, there, I think, in lies the male aspect of what you're talking about. Perhaps I don't see it just as the sheer, pure cause of women's rights, more as this is the next big thing.
Right, and we can sell newspapers.
Exactly.
Your character is interesting in that, in many ways, she's very similar to Sir Charles.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them say they find it very hard to talk on an intimate level.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I think that really what makes this play so much fun for me to do every night is sort of seeing, like, I'm reminded of heliography, like mirrors and candles sort of reflecting off of each other, that I know I'm ridiculous, that there are things in Emily that I see flashing from Charles, and there are things in Emily that I see flashing from Francis. And I think, you know, that so much of that comes from the fact that these characters, just like Arnold Bennett himself, are in London, but they're from this sort of provincial town. And so there's something about, you know, we have our own club of people who understand each other, because we're not really of that place, and we're not really of this place either. We're somewhere in the middle.
Wasn't it, I believe it's Virginia Woolf, but didn't she say on or about 1910, human character changed?
Yeah. We're talking about modernism.
But... modernism, and how the old world orders of the 19th century were being challenged in ways that nobody had ever seen with.
Now, I wonder about taking on these roles in another way. I've spoken to actors about playing parts that are well known, where they have to fight against the public's version. You know, you can't play Stanley Kowalski without Marlon Brando being there. In this case, you have an odd situation where you have a revival of a play, but you can create these characters for the first time.
It's incredibly exciting. And many of the things that I've done throughout the years, I've had different reference points that I could look to. This, I really couldn't come up with much of anything. And so the freedom to interpret and lay in my own interpretations, referring back to what I was telling you about the 12-year-old and the common man, and my own – infuse that with my own experience in this world is intensely exciting.
It's the most fun thing I can possibly think of.
You've done Shakespeare, Shaw, Ibsen. In those cases, you did have other people who'd done the plays before you.
A good number of
memorably.
Other people, yes.
You played Eliza in Pygmalion, Nora in The Dollhouse, nominated for an award for Theodora in Arcadia, right? Also
yeah.
In God in America, the God in America series on PBS. And Rob, what have you enjoyed doing most? Was it 39 Steps?
39 Steps was, I think, one of the most magical things I've ever been given the opportunity to do. I've also been lucky enough to be hired as the sort of quicksilver-tongued guy in the Noel Coward pieces, in the 39 Steps, in Yasmina Risa plays.
In art.
In art, and I've also done Lifetimes 3, and now in this, which is a handful of words.
And you also had a stint teaching acting in Columbia, South America.
I spent the decade of the 90s. After graduating from school, I worked for a while and then was given an opportunity to go to South America and decided to take that 23-year-old somewhere else and have that adventure that brought me back 10 years later. And here I am.
Well, and thank you both for being with us. Rob Breckenridge plays Sir Charles Worgan. Ellen Adair plays Emily Vernon in the revival of a 1909 play by Arnold Bennett called What the Public Wants. It's at the Mint Theater on West 43rd Street on the third floor, and its run is scheduled through March 13th. For ticket information, you can go to our show page at wnyc.org. And it's been a lot of fun.
It has.
Thank you so much, Leonard.